Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Pleased to have with me Patrick Ryan. Hey, Patrick, good morning.
Morning, Joe. How are you?
Great. Doing very good. How are you today in Madison?
Pretty good. Summer's awesome. Here, finally.
Summer is finally here. It feels really, really good, doesn't it? And we'd like to welcome you to another stream broadcast. Today's program is being streamed live via the phone and also the internet. It is also being recorded, so if you'd like to listen or share it with others, you may feel free to do so. It's always posted at the PAW website. We have a great lineup today. Look forward to bringing Jeff Grady into the conversation. We'll provide an introduction about Jeff here shortly. Patrick, I know you wanted to bring up an update regarding community paramedicine.
Yeah, we had some very, positive developments as of late. So in line with kind of how we ended the legislative session with kind of essentially running out of time to get all of the interested parties together to talk in one room prior to that, you know, we'd all had separate conversations. So we just weren't able to ensure that we were all on the same page. So with Representative Loudenbeck and also Senator Shanklin, we convened at the Capitol on the second or last Tuesday. We had the continued coalition that we've built with PFFW, with the fire chiefs, and PAW in attendance. In addition to that, we had DHS. So we had James Newland and Jennifer Ulsvik from DHS, as well as one of their attorneys. We had a bill drafter there as well. We had as well as representatives from WHA and the Wisconsin Medical Society, and also Kim Litwack from UW-Milwaukee. I think it was great to have her there to give that perspective of here's what the training is going to look like, here's what we've done to this point. And so as we discussed and went through it, you know, in some ways I think we kind of got back to where we were. So there wasn't any groundbreaking revelations, but, you know, we built that consensus that, here's the way we want it to look. And essentially we're back to the, you know, the original notion that we think there's a room for both community paramedic and community EMT. We want to enable the rural areas to be able to utilize this program on some level. We have to help to establish and define the curriculum of how we're going to train people. But it also became apparent that we need to have some changes in the statutes to enable EMTs to do things other than pre-hospital emergency care. So I think as we look back in the silent period, so to speak, from DHS, it does make some sense that under current statutes, there really isn't anything that says that an EMT can be used in this new and an innovative way. But the good thing is that everybody in attendance was all in agreement that yes, we're all for making those necessary changes to enable that portion of it and then let the rest of the process play out. So we have some time between now and the end of the year to be ready for the next session in early 2017 to be able to have a bill that has gone through, you know, some additional discussion and evolution so that when we get to that point in time, we're going to have something that we're all going to be able to get behind and try to move through the legislation. The legislature. So again, positive things, not anything really different. It's just that we're all together, I think, essentially on the same page and in agreement as to how this can go forward.
Very good. I think that's great news, Patrick. And do you anticipate these meetings happening between now and the time the legislation is introduced?
Yeah, as we left
to kind of vet this out a little
meeting.
Bit more.
As we left that meeting, we will get some drafts back to the stakeholder group so that we can then have more pointed discussion on different perspectives. So, yeah, I don't know when that's going to happen, but that's definitely going to be the process. So there's going to be plenty of vetting and plenty of opportunity for input as we go through into the summer and then into the fall.
Well, very good. That's excellent news. Congratulations on the information there. That's very, very important. And I know something you at Ryan Brothers Ambulances have been working very diligently with in opening now your second community paramedicine clinic at a local apartment to benefit the residents. So very, very good.
Yep, we officially call it a health and resource center. I know that's been kind of the term we have kind of used as clinic. I know that was there was some discussions on that in our meeting about how currently are the community paramedics being utilized, and we all acknowledge that there are a number of progressive services that are establishing programs up and running, and some. Not necessarily pilot phases, but some things that we're doing and staying within the scope that currently exists. So we'll continue to do that. I know, Milwaukee and the general Milwaukee area has been pretty progressive on things as well. So there's a lot of good things happening. And again, I think to a person, nobody wants to stifle any of that process in laying the groundwork for what will come in the future.
Yes, definitely. And what's ironic, too, and I'm glad you brought up Milwaukee, our guest on the EMS Live in Wisconsin podcast on June 14th is Captain Michael Wright with the Milwaukee Fire Department. He now has some data from doing community paramedicine within the department there, and they've done some phenomenal things here in addressing diabetic and also high-risk babies. And some interesting information that he's looking to share with us. So that's our June 14th EMS Live podcast. Thank you for the update, Patrick. I also want to share with our listening audience a couple takeaway points here, some things that are coming up, just to keep them in mind. We received word about a 2016 Midwest route for the National EMS Memorial Bike Ride. This is pretty cool. It is starting in Chicago and will eventually end up in Woodbury, Minnesota, but it is traveling through Wisconsin at several points to include Milwaukee, Green Bay, La Crosse, and all points in between as they make their way to Minnesota. If you'd like some information on this, the dates are June 25 to June 30, and you can get more information at the website muddyangels.org. That, again, is muddyangels.org. Appreciate Scott Cravens with EMS World Magazine sharing that with me, as well as Craig Nelson with the Memorial is very involved in that, the EMS Honor Guard. So appreciate that very much. Also want to point out that just the other day, actually, the EMS office in Madison sent out a link to a survey. They're collecting information from those that transport patients. So if you're in that category, you are invited to complete a survey. It takes about 15 minutes. And what the intent is to obtain baseline information so they can better target support and funding for ambulance services. You can find more information out on the PAW homepage at paaw.us to take the survey. And one just simple quick reminder, this is also on the radar. June 30th is the deadline for EMTs and first responders to renew their license for the next 2-year biennium. If you don't renew your license by then, you cannot practice as a patient care provider on an ambulance or provide any type of care after midnight on June 30th, 2016. Our guest today is Jeff Grady. Jeff now is affiliated with the Three Pillars Technology Solutions group in Madison. He is the Senior Director for Security and Compliance Solutions. We're going to be chatting with Jeff around HIPAA compliance and what that all means and how it is changing very quickly, and some things that you in the EMS and ambulance world truly need to be aware of as it relates to HIPAA compliance. And so we look very forward to having Jeff on the program here very, very soon after our next commercial break. I want to bring to your attention a really cool discount that we'd like to announce on this program, and then we'll post something to our website. But you can join thousands of EMS professionals in New Orleans, October 3 to 7, at the largest EMS conference and trade show in North America. PAW has partnered with EMS World Expo to provide our members with a $100 discount on a 3-day conference and free exhibit hall passes. Just use promo code PAW, P-A-W, when registering. The website to register at is www.emsworldexpo.com. That again is www.emsworldexpo.com. EMSLive.com. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Our program continues after these short breaks.
Since 1997, Savick Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is Savick Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 Savick members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Granger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a Savick member, or go online to paw.us/Savick, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual Savick member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join Savick today.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan. I'm also very pleased to bring into our streamed podcast Jeff Grady. Jeff, hello, and welcome to EMS Live.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Patrick. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, great to have you with us. Jeff reached out to us recently regarding his products and services, contacted Patrick Ryan, and we are most impressed. Jeff was recently at a PAW Board of Directors meeting talking about HIPAA and HIPAA compliance. And we thought it would be great to share this information on the podcast. It is a changing world out there, Jeff. And for an ambulance service, you need to know where your risk factors are. HIPAA is one of them. It's not the standard get a signature on the patient form anymore. It's much more advanced than that.
So true, Joe. And that's appreciate the introduction. And we actually probably have to toss in Tom Shorter, who's, your legal advisor for PAW, as he's the one who actually recommended, suggested I reach out and make the introduction, because he saw the need arising from his perspective and wanted to bring us forward. HIPAA has changed, I'd say, night and day. It's I would say 180 from what it used to be, as you said, signing up some papers, getting your notices out there, to what today you need to be more aware of is where your data lies, which is in your technology. So it's gone from the privacy rule to the security rule, big time.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, one thing that we like to talk about on this program is how can we help facilitate communications with ambulance services? What are some things that we can point out through the talented resources such as yourself and others that come on this program, and recommendations that you offer to ambulance directors, managers, and so on within the departments? And one of these is developing best practice for HIPAA and how you handle that important electronic patient health information, or EPHI. And HIPAA has changed over the years. Like we had just mentioned, it's not just a signature card anymore. You're actually capturing data in the system, having them sign to that data, and then how you manage and handle that data from then on is really your responsibility.
And I expand upon that, Joe. You set me up perfectly there. What I tell everyone is forget all you think you know about HIPAA, because, as you said, and we'll repeat it all throughout this podcast here, it has changed. HIPAA high tech is probably the one trigger point that created the major change. It took what was pretty much a dormant HIPAA world and made it more vibrant. Brought some really aggressive enforcement aspects forward. We'll talk about that. But again, more than anything, it changed your whole focus. So now you need to be aware of the security rule of HIPAA, because it's a security rule that raises your big risk factors from a breach standpoint. And unfortunately, what we're finding is most of the small, medium-sized businesses out there are not aware what they need to do for the security rule. There are some basic, just you have to have them done, or you're in what's known as willful neglect out there. And you don't want to be in that world of willful neglect.
What are those things that you would suggest, Jeff, to ambulance services out there that should, you know, immediately start looking at their risk factors so they don't have the whole willful neglect scenario as a part of their situation?
Well, it all ties into getting, first of all, probably should get some good legal advice if you don't have that already to make sure that you are following the law. But from the standpoint, and I'm not an attorney, you need to be aware that the security rule first and foremost wants to make sure that you've thought about what you're doing out there. And it sounds so simple, but that's where the, I guess, the complexity steps in. The security rule requires that any organization, whether you're a covered entity, a business associate, anyone subject to the security rule must have documented a security risk analysis. If you do not have that document, it's the fundamental first thing they'll ask for if there ever were to happen to be a breach, and breaches happen, you are going to be found in willful neglect. It's not that you did something maliciously wrong, grossly negligent. It's just, it is the law. It's been out there since technically 2005, and if you don't have it, you're going to be found in willful neglect. And I might as well tell everyone, willful neglect has some harsh consequences. It requires a mandatory investigation by the OCR if a breach would ever happen. There are some mandatory minimum penalties. It starts at $10,000 per violation. If you cure that violation within 30 days, and then it goes up to $50,000 per violation if not cured within 30 days. So there's just no discretion if you're not doing the right things there. So I would recommend to everyone, make sure, you know, ask whoever you have to within your own organization, do we have a security risk analysis? And it should actually be titled HIPAA Security Risk Analysis.
I know, speaking from my own personal experience with identity theft and having my health records taken at a clinic by a cleaning person that was supposedly removing the confidential information to a secure area for shredding, was actually keeping that information and using the identity. So do not take this very lightly. And there's also many, many situations out there that we hear about where people's credit card information has been captured and is being used as identity theft. So if you're in possession of a computer and you're capturing this information, you need to protect it. That is your responsibility.
And we could debate whether that's the right approach. It's always bothered me a little bit that, you know, we're dealing with well-intentioned people doing their best with the resources they've been provided, and they're not out to typically abuse and lose this information, but there are criminal elements out there. I'm sure everyone in the audience has heard about now this thing called ransomware, which is a little unusual because those are hackers, criminals who want to let you know that they are in your system, because they'll bring your system down if you don't pay up the ransom they're asking for. And so it all ties back into making sure you're doing the right things to protect that data in the first place. And it goes beyond, I think, just being worried about an audit or being fined. What we're discovering out there is that this heightened awareness about needing to protect the data, the consequences if you don't protect that data, have created this mindset. And we're seeing it now with larger regional health groups, larger providers, healthcare organizations. They're actually starting to look at all their business partners, their business associates. And my guess is that many of your members have relationships with larger regional health groups, maybe counties with senior assisted living, hospitals, and their legal counsel is telling them to take a look at who you're partnering with and make sure that they're doing the right thing. And so it's not just to avoid a fine or the possibility of an audit, but if you want to retain your business contracts, you will need to do this and be able to prove that you're doing it, or they're not going to give you the business. So that hits home. I'm a small business owner, so when I hear something like that, I don't like that exposure because I want to stay in business.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Jeff. If you have a question that you'd like to ask Jeff and you're listening on the phone, just press number 1 on your keypad. We'd be happy to bring you into the call. If you're listening via the internet, you're welcome to send an emailed question to our email inbox. Patrick is monitoring. It's emslive@paaw.us. Again, emslive@paaw.us. Jeff, how has, you know, HIPAA's been around a long time. And what, in your opinion, what's changed and why is there a renewed sense of urgency with HIPAA compliance again?
Well, we probably covered some of that with the fact that HIPAA high tech, which was a law that was passed back in 2009, it actually didn't become effective until regulations for that law were passed in 2013. You'll sometimes hear it referred to as an omnibus rule. So it wasn't really until 2013, not so long ago, that all these new ramifications of the of what I call the ramped up on steroids enforcement aspects of HIPAA began. And so that was a major change. And again, before that, people had become complacent, quite frankly. They had their policy procedures. We used to joke, you know, where's your three-ring binder of policy procedures? That's your HIPAA compliance program. But literally, for most, that's what it was. And it was literally on a shelf somewhere collecting dust. So when you have people who've heard about HIPAA for years and years, it's hard to change a mindset, and you have to educate them, let them know things have really changed. It's not the old HIPAA world anymore. The other aspect is that sense of urgency now is greater because we have a couple things coming at us. The OCR, the Office for Civil Rights, which is the enforcement arm of the federal government for HIPAA, has just started sending out the audit pre-audit letters. So they've been telling us for some years that an audit program is going to be recommenced and it's going to become a permanent program, and now we're actually seeing the facts. The letters are going out. What's troubling about this is they've set this up for what's known as a desk audit program, so they can just run all this through a web portal out of Washington, hit send, and whoever's in that database is going to get this notice, and they'll have eventually 10 days to respond to produce all this documentation they're supposed to have already. So that worries me a little bit. They also have some whistleblower legislation working through the regulatory process right now, which is going to create a financial incentive for people to report violations of HIPAA, because then they'll be able to get some of a percentage of these large fines you read about. So all of that's going on. And if you want to stay in business, again, I think that's probably uppermost in my mind when people are going to start asking you for more than that signature on a business BA agreement and ask to see your updated policy procedures. They'll ask to see your documented security risk analysis, and you can't show that, you're going to have a contract relationship that's in jeopardy. So that's the major change, I think, Joe.
Very good point. Patrick, did you have some things that you wanted to add, or has anybody emailed a question in?
We do have a question. I will read it from one of our listeners that actually I think must have seen the announcement of the show yesterday, because this came in yesterday. Gentleman writes, I had a breach of my personal medical record through a clinic appointment, and I'm wondering if there are any lawyers that pursue cases in the state of Wisconsin. I have been unable to find any. There is documented proof of this breach. I did find a lawyer in Indiana, but he is not able to practice in Wisconsin, so my hope is that somebody on this podcast would be able to help me. So, Jeff?
Well, let's just start this way. I am not a practicing attorney, so I'm not giving legal advice here. I just coincidentally happen to know a good attorney, though, and I think I can say this. He's not on the podcast, or if he is, you'll thank me later, Tom. Your own association is represented by one of the better healthcare HIPAA attorneys in Wisconsin, the way of Tom Shorter. So you might want to consider at least starting there, but again, you'd be looking for someone that has background in data security, HIPAA law for something like this. I can tell you this much. The HIPAA law itself, the federal law, does not create a private cause of action. So don't think that you have a private cause of action under HIPAA. You can certainly file a complaint with the regulatory bodies there. And if this whistleblower legislation gets finalized, you actually may have some recourse for getting reimbursement in that fashion, but that's not in place yet. There are, however, many states, and I think Wisconsin among them, which create private causes of action for breach of your privacy. So there may be something there. But back to the original question, you would like to find an attorney. And again, I would suggest you look for an attorney who deals with healthcare, data security, litigation. And if nothing else, maybe begin with your own association counsel, Tom Shorter's office, and he could either direct you or point you in the right direction there.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
All right.
Tom, thanks. And Tom did not ask for that plug, by the way, so I apologize if I'm not supposed to do that. But I've known him for some years, so.
Tom is a great, great person. We enjoy his technical expertise. He's, as you mentioned, he's our legal counsel for healthcare-related matters for the association. We're chatting with Jeff Grady. Jeff is the senior director at Three Pillars Technology Solutions in Madison. And when we come back after our next break, which is about 1 minute, we'll be chatting with Jeff a little bit further. One of the questions we want to ask him is, if you're working with a third-party vendor, what's your recommendation? And does that meet your HIPAA compliance requirements under this regulatory requirement? You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Joe Cavelli. For nearly 10 years, I used the LADTEX scheduling tool for my EMT shifts. Having had this personal experience, I'd like to share how easy it was to submit my work availability to management and be assigned shifts. It was also easy to pick up open shifts or trade with others. I could even view my work schedule for the month, week, or day and know who else I was working with well ahead of that first 911 call. Best of all, I could access my schedule and all the great features offered by LADTEX right on my smartphone, tablet, or computer. Are you using the grease board or paper handouts yet for your work schedules? If so, that is a thing of the past. You'll discover too that LADTEX is more than just a scheduling tool. It offers many other great features as well. To learn more about LADTEX features or to sign up for a free trial version, visit LADTEX.com. That's LADTEC.com. Online employee scheduling and workforce management is much easier, faster, and better with LADTEX.
Don't miss a beat of Wisconsin EMS action. Listen to EMS Live or download any previous show on demand in the archive. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli joined by Patrick Ryan. We're chatting with Jeff Grady. Jeff is the Security and Compliance Solution Advisor at Three Pillars Technology in Madison. Jeff, right before the break, I kind of led in with a little bit of a teaser here, and I know it was one of the questions that you wrote us. If your electronic health record vendor states that they meet HIPAA compliance, does that meet your obligation under HIPAA? I think it's a really, really good question.
Well, and I asked it, and I'm glad you brought it up, Joe, because it's one of the biggest misconceptions that we run into out there, and it's easy to understand why it arises. Many times, and again, let's look at your membership. They bring an electronic health record vendor. They're very sophisticated. They have all the technical savvy and know-how, and they're taking care of your very sensitive data in their system and their software. You would almost think that they're primarily responsible for HIPAA compliance because it's their software that's controlling your data, but that's not the case. The fact that they have to meet HIPAA compliance as your business associate does not qualify, and I can't emphasize that enough because we hear it all the time. They'll say, oh, we got a letter from our vendor. They said they're HIPAA compliant. So I said, that's great. But that does not mean that you've met your compliance mandates. You have to conduct your own security risk analysis. And yes, your software vendor is part of that process, but they don't replace what you need to do. So don't take that false comfort in what your vendor tells you. You need to do this on your own as well.
I think that's an excellent point to be very proactive and to look at this. What are some key steps that you would suggest, Jeff, in meeting today's HIPAA compliance standards?
Well, you start at the beginning, build a foundation, and I would recommend anyone, you know, to know where you have to go forward from, you need to know where you're beginning from, right? What you might want to do is conduct a very high-level compliance gap assessment to show where you have some gaps in your current HIPAA compliance approach. But again, if probably the fifth time I've said it, if you have not conducted a security risk analysis, that's going to be so fundamental, and it will tell you where your gaps are. You don't need to be perfect because no one is, no one ever will be, but get that done so you know where you stand, and that'll also give you a good path forward as to what you need to address because it's not a one and done. You have to stay on top of this. You have to, as I say, start somewhere, start with that kind of basic compliance assessment, and then build forward.
How does somebody get in touch with you, Jeff, if they'd like to take that next step and chat with you further about the compliance review and risk assessment?
Well, we have a website out there at 3pillarstechnology.com, so that would be maybe a place to start. You can always reach me direct. My direct phone here in Madison, I'll give that out, is 608-807-5256, or feel free to email me. It's first initial last name, jgrady@3pillarstechnology.com. Again, one of the things, reasons I became interested in becoming involved with PAW is that I think one of the things we've tried to differentiate ourselves from so many of the others out there is that we realize you have to be realistic about this. Again, you're never going to be perfect. It's very easy to overspend on something that appears so complex. It doesn't have to be if you approach it smartly and do it the right way. So I'd encourage the conversation. There are options out there, but I think if you do a good job of educating your client or potential customer and you give them a good option, that's how it all comes together.
Yes, definitely. Patrick, did you have anything else? Any other questions?
No other questions, but I just want to thank Jeff for being with us today. I mean, it's very clear that you are a leader in this industry or this section or sector of the industry, and we're really fortunate to have you be part of our operation and a resource for our membership. You've talked about it in kind of layman's terms. You've kind of made it, you know, somewhat a really complicated issue be at least somewhat simple so that we can understand the basics and dive into this, and definitely a great bit of information today. Thank you.
Appreciate it much, Patrick. Joe, I look forward to having more communication conversation down the road. So any
that
more questions
great,
right
Jeff.
Now? Okay.
No, I think that'll do it. And if anybody emails them, we'll surely share them with you, and we sure invite you back again. This is something that will, I know, just continue to evolve. And as you encounter ambulance services or just see things in general as far as best practices with the industry, feel free to come back and share those with us.
Will do. Thanks again, Joe. Patrick, have a good day there. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
We appreciate you very much. Jeff Grady is Senior Director for Security and Compliance Solutions as the advisor at 3 Pillars Technology Solutions in Madison. Just a great, great resource and somebody to definitely chat with further if you would like to look at this in more detail, which we would suggest doing to at least have a written plan as we had just talked about. Well, Patrick, that'll wrap things up for today, our program today. Our next program is Tuesday, June 14th, starting at 9 o'clock. Our guest is Captain Michael Wright with the Milwaukee Fire Department. Captain Wright and his staff have been doing a terrific job in implementing community paramedicine concepts. They've used CP, the skills, and the approach with some high-risk populations in the Milwaukee area, targeting diabetic patients, reducing baby mortality rates, and other significant areas. The neat thing, and Michael's really excited about this, when I reached out to him, the neat thing about it is they have some data that they can support with the CP efforts, and this is a very, very encouraging news. So Captain Wright will be sharing that information with us during that that live broadcast. Patrick, anything else before we close things up?
Nope. Thanks again for a great show again today, Joe, and looking forward to hearing Captain Wright. He's been a great contributor to the whole CP movement, and we value his partnership.
Most definitely. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month starting at 9 a.m. We sure invite your participation with the program. Today's show was recorded, can be located for playback at paaw.us on the homepage. This is Joe Cavelli for the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. On behalf of myself and Patrick Ryan, thank you for listening today.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.